You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Similar to Facebook and Instagram, Go Wild is a social media platform, but specifically designed for the outdoor enthusiast. If you love hunting, fishing, or just being outside, the Go Wild app is for you. It is a community of like-minded individuals that get together and share their outdoor experiences, and it's a perfect place to show off your pictures, your harvest photos, the big catch of the day, whatever. It's a great community designed for hunters and fishermen, by hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. So be sure to give it a try. You can download Go Wild wherever apps are downloaded, Google Play Store, wherever. Or for more information, you can visit timetogowild.com. So take this time and download the app, and let's get wild.
Welcome to the Transition Wild Podcast, the home for those looking for expertise and inspiration on all things Western big game hunting. I'm your host, Adam Parr, and you're listening to episode number 31, where we talk with Adam Gall of Timber to Table Guide Service. Hello, how's it going? Hope everyone's having a great day. Thanks for tuning into the Transition Wild Podcast, hosted on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. Hope you're out hunting. It's the end of November here. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. As mentioned from the last podcast, I went to Oklahoma and had some success there. It's been great to dive into some fresh whitetail venison. Been cooking that up like it's going out of style, so it's always nice to have. And now I'm gearing up for my next and final hunt of the year. Got a late season cow rifle elk tag. So I don't know how much time I'll have to really devote to this tag, but I'm for sure going to get out for a hunt this coming weekend. So a couple days after this episode airs, I'll be out there chasing some elk and hopefully put another cow in the freezer. Or hopefully put a cow in the freezer. It'd be nice to cap off the end of the year with a full elk and be able to share a little bit more with friends and family. So that's always fun. The tag goes until the end of January, so I've got some time. But due to work travel with Quiet Cat and you know the holiday travel, doing all that stuff, it's just a busy time of year for me. So I'm hoping I'll get a crack at something the first weekend, but we'll see. Stay tuned for that. If you like what you're hearing, I know I say this all the time, but go to sportsmansnation.com. You can subscribe to the podcast that way. You can leave us a good review. If you like what you're hearing, like the episodes, the content we're putting out, leave us a 5-star review. It'd be much, much appreciated. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, plenty of places to leave reviews at. And again, always appreciated when you guys do that. Go to transitionwild.com and subscribe there. We still are offering our beginner Colorado elk hunting guide. So all you have to do is send me your email. We'll get you subscribed and I will send you that for free. It's really, you know, if you're planning your elk hunt for next year, it's never too early to start. So go there, subscribe, you'll get the guide. It'll walk you through kind of, you know, where to hunt, when to hunt, gear you need, scouting, all that stuff. So make sure you do that. It's never too early to start planning. All right, today's episode, we have Adam Gall with Timber to Table Guide Service. And I came across an article of his that was sent, on their website. My buddy Pete, who I work with, he sent me the link to their website and was kind of reading up on them, and they're doing some really cool stuff. This podcast isn't really talking about elk strategy or tactics and not really any of that. What I'm talking to Adam about today is really what they're doing to not hunter recruitment, it's not necessarily the right word, but we're talking about what they've been doing to kind of promote hunting and the whole process of you know, going out and going on the hunt and preparing, and then you know the entire full circle of the wild game and breaking down the animal and talking about conservation and wildlife management and really introducing people to this lifestyle and this heritage. And they're doing that through partnerships through the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, where they host these kind of workshops, right? So they've got, college students that have never hunted before, graduate students that are going into wildlife conservation, whether they're biologists or doing research on chronic wasting disease, the future of hunting, and introducing them and going on these hunts and bringing in folks to talk about all different aspects from firearm safety to cooking and breaking down the animal to wildlife biologists talking about conservation and land and wildlife and hunting and fishing and all that stuff. So they're doing some really cool work as an outfitter and really promoting it. So I wanted to promote what they're doing and talk to Adam about all this. So that's what we're diving into today, is talking a lot about that, what they do, where they're located. Adam's got a really cool background as well. I found out we're both from Michigan, which is pretty interesting. And what can I say? He's got a cool name. So a really fun, a really enjoyable episode. I had a great time talking with Adam. So let's not wait any longer. Let's get him on the line. All right, on the line with us now, we have Adam Gall with Timber to Table Guide Service. How you doing today, Adam?
I'm great, Adam. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be able to talk with you.
Yeah. Appreciate you taking the time. You have I must say you have a great name.
Likewise, yeah.
Well, thank you. So I was checking out your site and saw that you were local here in Colorado and kind of read about some of the stuff you have going on with, your introduction of new hunters to or new people to hunting and dealing a lot with Colorado and what you're doing with the Colorado Parks and Wildlife and just thought it'd be a great opportunity to kind of give you a call and talk to you a little bit about a little bit of everything. So if you're up for that, I'm definitely looking forward to picking your brain a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. Fire away.
All right. So I know we've traded a few kind of emails back and forth. It sounds like you're still doing some late season hunting here at the end of November. How's that going? What are you going after? Are you doing some late season elk hunts?
Yeah. So with, really the, we kind of, my wife and I have, my wife is Anna, and we run Timber to Table Guide Service, and that started out primarily as, late season cow elk hunts, with a focus kind of trying to target, as you mentioned, new or relatively new hunters. Most of the folks that we take have never hunted, or if they have, it's very minimal, small game or something like that. But
yeah,
but those run typically starting right around now. And this year we're running them into January. We've had quite a bit of interest, and so trying to accommodate the interest as far as getting the folks out there that want to go, but at the same time, we have to be careful with the land that we hunt, so we're not peppering the holy smokes out of the resident elk population. But to answer your question, the first hunt actually just started a couple days ago. It's actually a hunt sponsored by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, partnering with Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow, which are both fantastic organizations. I'm sure most folks have heard of the Elk Foundation, but Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow is a really cool organization as far as what they're doing for the future of hunting and management and stuff. So, but yeah, our hunts right now they're on private land. And like I say, they're 100% focused on cow elk. So,
Yeah.
I think really I answered your question. No. Maybe longer than you wanted to hear.
No, that's great. I actually have a late season private land cow tag as well, and I'm hoping to get out. I won't be able to go out this weekend, but next weekend I'm gonna give a go and see if I can put a little bit more meat in the freezer. I've got a mule deer, a couple whitetail, and it'd be nice to really cap it off with a nice fat cow in the freezer to carry me through till next season.
Yeah, if you can eat that many animals, you are a well-fed, proteined fella.
Yeah, well, I take good appreciation in being able to kind of share that harvest. All my friends love it, and family and everything. So I tend to give quite a bit away, and it makes me feel good, right? Because I process everything myself, and you know, when you take that animal, you put a lot of work into it, and to be able to kind of share that with somebody, it really makes me feel good, and it also kind of introduces them to hunting in a new way to you know, consume organic wild game, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's a great way to open folks' eyes as far as sharing a really well-prepared meal, or even a, you know, just kind of an appetizer or something.
But yeah,
something where they're introduced to it for the first time and they realize it doesn't taste gamey, or you know, all the preconceived notions that they might have can kind of get dispelled. And that might be the next future hunter, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And by the name of your outfit and your guide service, like Timber to Table, it kind of seems like you're very much along the lines of the entire kind of process, right? Like it's not just going out and killing something and, you know, take the photos and it's all done. It seems like you're all about the introduction and showing people kind of the conservation model here in North America and how wildlife comes to be and how funding and then you get into the hunt itself and guiding and then processing and then consuming that animal. It seems like you've kind of got everything full spectrum and are kind of promoting hunting in a way that it's all inclusive from every step. Is that kind of the whole gist of what you have going on there?
Yes, you're hired. That was a good way to to put it. I'm a former high school science teacher here in Hotchkiss, and I've always kind of had an interest in education and put a lot of value in its importance. Both my parents were public school teachers, so my brother was a teacher. So, I mean, teaching is kind of something that is important to me, but at the same time, you know, wildlife and being outdoors and outdoor education is kind of a natural draw for me. So being able to carry that into guiding was sort of a natural fit. And I think if you have a good guide, whether you're on a river or climbing a mountain or on a hunt, you should learn something from that guide if they're worth their salt. And then, you know, on the other side of things, my wife is a really good butcher. And the interest in, or the growing interest in the role food plays in hunting is growing, and which is a good thing, because I think there was a time there, and it's still present, which is fine, but I think there was a time there where the emphasis on antlers was just really kind of overshadowing the important role that food plays in hunting from a historical standpoint, and also just from a matter of fact. At the end of the day, hunting is about food, you know, and so when my wife and I started talking about how we could put together some sort of outfit of our own, that's where the light kind of flipped on. I was like, well, what if we taught people, you know, how to hunt in an ethical way and gave them a good introduction to hunting if they've never done it before. And then to take it a step further, as you alluded to, instead of just, well, you squeeze the trigger and you shoot the animal and your hunt's over, what if we took it to the next level and said, now that you've killed it, let's break it down and talk about it from a food standpoint. And that's where my wife was really able to step in and fulfill that role as far as the business model that we wanted to create, and the service that we wanted to provide to the hunters.
Yeah.
That come with us. So yeah, it's been pretty well received.
Yeah, that's really cool. And like you said, it's that antler craze of the 90s and, you know, into the 2000s, it was such a big deal. Like, that's all everybody cared about. And then now I'm starting to see the same trend of it kind of coming back full circle. And it's not necessarily about the antlers. It's not necessarily how big the deer or elk is. It's that experience. It's learning something. It's having appreciation for the land, the animals, and then at the end of the day, enjoying the bounties of the wild game and the meat itself. So that's really cool that you're promoting that. And, you know, a big reason why I wanted to kind of talk to you today is just because we need more of people like you is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. And I think it's important too, to note, or at least I want to at least clarify, I love antlers as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. Do not get me wrong. I mean, I found my first match set of whitetail sheds when I was a really little kid, and I've been a shed hunter for a long time before shed hunting was
cool,
was all the rage that it is now. So you know, people that are after the big bull or are after the big buck, you know, those animals are hard to kill. And
they
so
are.
If you've got a hunter that has that skill level, that can kill a trophy bull every year or even once in their lifetime, that's hard to do, you know, and that really requires a lot of skill as a hunter. So I'm not trying to downplay, you know, the role of antlers in hunting or even trophy hunting at large, but we wanted to, with Timber to Table at least, we wanted to try and make it more about the food and more about an educational experience versus, you know, the guy or gal who's a veteran hunter, you know, and they don't necessarily need to be told how to gut the animal or told how to, you know, break down a round off the hindquarter or whatever.
Yep.
So just to clarify.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. I love big antlers. I like to target the older deer, but hey, if something walks by that I want to shoot, it's not all about that. So, we're definitely on the same page there. Now, I saw on your background too, you had on your website, you used to be a firefighter, forestry technician. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. When I was born in Michigan, I was in high school.
Where are you from in Michigan?
I was born in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
I grew up in a little tiny town called Caledonia. It was a little farm town, but Grand Rapids was the closest big city, the southwest.
Yeah, I'm from just south of Lansing, Olivet area. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I'm a Michigan boy as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think my basketball coach when I was a freshman, he went to Olivet.
No kidding.
But anyways, wow. Yeah. So,
so you grew up there.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I had a great biology teacher, and he took a group of students. There was a couple summers where he took a group of students out and did like a 3-week long trip through the Rocky Mountain West, doing kind of science related stuff in the various national parks, the Badlands, Yellowstone, Rocky Mountain National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me very interested in what the West had to offer in terms of just all the wildlife. And because even then I knew I wanted to be a wildlife biologist when I was a little kid. That was my, you know, dream job or whatever. And so I think once I was out of high school, I started applying for positions on trail crews and fire crews with the National Forests out West. And I got picked up by the Powell Ranger District, which is in north central Idaho on the Clearwater National Forest. I got hired on their fire crew when I was 20 years old. And I think at the time I was living with eight other roommates and a house and working four different jobs trying to make rent. And pretty much got offered that job and quit all four jobs the next day and bought a plane ticket to Missoula, and that was the end of that. So I did come back and finish college. My parents were pretty adamant about that. I was ready to drop out of college and just start my career in the fire world. But I'm glad I finished. It was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But that was my title on the fire crew, as a forestry technician, is the title they give you as a firefighter out there.
Got it. And then I also see you have wolf biologists on your resume. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So once I kind of lost the interest in the firefighting world, once I realized what it was all about, it was a great job when I did it, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it as a career. Wildlife was still my focus, you know, and what I wanted to be. And so right place, right time, meeting some folks, and I got hired on as a wolf biologist with the Nez Perce tribe in Idaho and worked for them for 5 years before moving on to becoming a science teacher. That wolf biologist job was it's how I met my wife. It's probably the best job I'll ever have. I love guiding, but that wolf biologist job was the stuff I got to see and do will never be replicated again. It was just an incredible opportunity and a time to be working on those animals post reintroduction, which was pretty controversial, obviously. But when you drop all of the politics and the BS that surrounds some of that stuff and just look at the animal for what it is, they're amazing animals. Controversial for sure, but getting to work on them was pretty cool. It was a pretty special period in my life, so I'm grateful for the experience.
Yeah, I actually did two wolf podcasts here this past, I think it was in the spring. I had on a member from the Rocky Mountain Wolf Project, basically the organization that was proposing the reintroduction here to Colorado, and I had them on, kind of helped them tell their story. And then I had a follow-up guest who is basically an independent biologist, kind of probably very similar to what your position was, and he had his take on it, and, you know, just presented the whole you know, data.
Who are the what were the names of those folks, if you don't mind me asking?
Let me pull it up here right now. I got it on my website here. Dr. Phillips, I think, was from the Rocky Mountain Elk Fund or Rocky Mountain Wolf Project, I want to say.
Is it Mike Phillips?
Mike Phillips. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know he was part of some of the stuff with Yellowstone and, you know, doing some research on the stuff.
Yeah,
in the Great Lakes
Mike
region.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very well known.
Yep. And then I, John Keener was the follow up. He was a carnivore ecologist with a PhD. And, you know, he was very, he wasn't working for an agency or anything. So he was very non-biased in his opinions and his experiences of carnivores and wolves and, how they, you know, kind of interact with the landscape. Regardless of all that, it was my kind of first take and first look into wolves themselves and the role that they play. And it was just a very interesting, discussion between both parts and eye-opening, to say the least.
Yep. Yeah. They're, like I say, everybody has an opinion on them for sure. And they're usually not in the gray area.
Yeah.
Not too often.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear your take from somebody who, you know, obviously spent a lot of time studying these animals and their impacts and, you know, basically learning everything about them to now, you know, on the other side where you're a hunter and a guide and you're running a business. What's your take on the whole proposed reintroduction to Colorado?
I think a federal reintroduction of wolves would be a mistake, in my opinion. I think having them naturally recover themselves in the area, which they will,
yeah,
you know, if given the opportunity,
mm-hmm,
they'll eventually get here and do it on their own. That, to me, is the smarter way to go about having wolves back on the landscape. I think they certainly have a right to be here. They have a place on the landscape that I think is valuable. They would still need to be managed just like any other wildlife, whether it's elk, mountain lions, whatever it might be. Wolves will need to be managed as well. But the concern I have with a federal reintroduction is, in particular, in this day and age that we're living in right now, wolves are divisive all on their own. When you start trying to force feed folks with a federal government mantra, you're going to create even more divisiveness, and things seem pretty polarized from a political standpoint, as they are anyways right now in this climate that we're in politically. So I think the feds just need to stay out of it. And I know that's the only way that they're going to get an immediate reintroduction, was, you know, through federal intervention. But I think that would just be a huge mistake. What I would like to see is for some of the wolf proponents, you know, the folks that want to see them back in here, I think education would be really helpful, and to start going around to some of the more rural towns instead of going to places like Boulder and Durango,
yeah,
where you're basically preaching to the choir.
Mm-hmm.
But going to some of the places, the communities that are going to be impacted when wolves are actually on the landscape, and I would say the rural areas of the Western Slope, like where I live currently, your livestock operators, those are the ones that are going to feel the brunt of it and bear the brunt of it. It's not going to be, you know, not to sound like a jerk, but it's not going to be a soccer mom living in Fort Collins who's going to be dealing with the reality of wolves on the landscape. It's going to be your local ranchers. And so doing some outreach to those communities and talking about it and educating them as far as, when wolves are here, here's some considerations you're going to need to make, and how you operate your livestock operation that you've never had to do before. But when wolves are here, here's some things you're going to need to consider doing if you don't want to have problems. And so that, to me, would go a lot further than just, hey, we want to have wolves, give us some money so we can lobby the government.
Yeah.
That, to me, is not the not the approach I would take with it. I would be trying to do some local outreach and education first, and get some of those folks on board, maybe, or at least have them up to speed, and then talk about, you know, bringing wolves in or whatever. But at the end of the day, I guess my bottom line is, let them come here on their own, and it'll save a lot of train wrecks and a lot of headache and hassle, and start doing your outreach right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, when I talked to John Keener, he was along the same lines, as you. It would not be a good idea. It could have disastrous effects potentially. And, you know, I kind of went into the mindset, you know, like, hey, like I'm not against animals. I don't want to say like, oh, kill all the wolves, and, you know, I don't want any wolves. I was kind of looking at the aspect of, hey, I want to find out more information about these animals. You know, what are the impacts? What are the potential factors that we need to consider? How would they be managed? And it was just a really cool, like, soul searching kind of couple week period where I interviewed both sides of the spectrum, and it was interesting to say the least. But what came of it, I was further educated on the subject, and hopefully people listening or other people that have tuned into that, those particular episodes, were able to kind of get enlightened on their side from the whole spectrum, and how it will actually impact, you know, like you said, the ranchers, the hunters, the people living in the landscape. So it's interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's important to know too. I think one of the fears is, you know, oh my God, they're going to decimate the elk herds and they're going to kill all the deer and da da da. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
There's going to be an adjustment period where the elk and deer, and it's primarily elk, you know, that wolves target, that they're going to have to figure out how to live with a keystone predator back on the landscape. So they're going to change their behavior. They're going to get killed. It's competition for us without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as eradicating the herds, and it's not going to happen. Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana have record numbers of elk in all three states with wolves on the landscape and grizzlies, I might add. So,
yeah.
So I think it's, yeah, that's kind of a little bit of a myth, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Well, let's dive into a little bit of what you have going on with this Hunting for Sustainability course. That was something that I read about on your website and found that very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about like what that is, maybe how it came to be, and you know what you're doing currently with that?
Yeah, it's a program actually developed by Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, which is a great organization, and they started this Hunting for Sustainability course as a means of mostly targeting their collegiate club members that were interested in learning how to hunt, who maybe didn't have any prior hunting experience. And it's a weekend long course. It's free to the student. And they basically, in those 2 to 3 days, they get a pretty in-depth and very professional, I guess, education, not to keep throwing that word around, but
it's what it is.
Introduction,
yeah.
And education, yeah, on what hunting is, everything from the history of wildlife management through the North American model of wildlife conservation to hunter's safety as far as firearms go to, you know, usually we try to kill an animal, usually a doe, so they can get a look at field dressing the animal, and then breaking it down. And then, like I say, with us hosting it this year and Anna being able to educate people on the processing part, we were able to do that. So it is, it's a ton of stuff thrown at them in a very organized and facilitated way. I shouldn't say thrown at them because it is.
Well, it's a lot to take in.
It's blocked out.
Yeah,
it's blocked out hour to hour the whole weekend, and it's a bunch of really good information. And obviously, we talk about the importance of public lands as well as private lands in the role of wildlife management and conservation. So it's a great program. I think they started it in Montana 2 seasons ago, and then they expanded this year to offering those programs in Idaho, Wyoming, and obviously Colorado. This is the first year they did it here, so hopefully it'll continue to spread as far as a national offering goes, because it's a fantastic thing. The curriculum that we use for it is well done. It's well put together. And what I tried to do with ours was bring in a pretty diverse group of facilitators. So we had Pat Dorsey, who's the Southwest Regional Biologist for CPW. She was fantastic. She came in and gave several talks. We had Andrew Taylor, who's our local game warden, basically, with CPW. He came in, gave some talks. He also ran the shooting. He ran the range basically Sunday morning with shotgun and rifle practice. And then my wife and I kind of facilitated the hunting, field dressing, and processing. So, and Brian Webster also helped with some of the processing and field dressing as well. And he is the Colorado Wyoming chapter coordinator for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. So anyways, yeah, it's a fantastic program, and hopefully it'll continue to be funded and continue to expand at the national level.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, for myself, and I'm sure for you as well, or, you know, many people that actually listen to this podcast that have been hunting for a long time, you just kind of forget that, like, where you started, right? And, like, everyone, you think in this mindset that everyone knows, you know, as much as you do, or knows how to process an animal, or knows the correct way to hunt, and knows about all these different things from the animal and wildlife and, you know, public land side. But, and the reality is a lot of people don't. And if you never grew up hunting, and if you've never been brought up in that kind of lifestyle, you're really at square one. So it sounds like that's really what you're doing. You're developing, you know, kind of setting the stage, the right way and the proper way, and giving them a sneak peek, a sense, but you're going through everything from the start. That's really neat. That's very cool.
Yeah, and it is, you just mentioned, it is, and we get this a lot in conversations with folks that are interested in going on hunts with timber to table, is it is common for people who didn't have a dad or an aunt or a grandma or an uncle or a brother or whatever who hunted. And they don't even know where to go to get their hunter safety. And it's very easy to overlook some of those simple things when you grew up with it, for sure. And so I think not forgetting that and making sure you're kind of, you know, looking at the big 30,000 foot view and trying to put yourself in the shoes of those folks that maybe they're intimidated by it, or there's just too many hurdles, and trying to make it easier for them to come into the fold with getting started hunting, if it is something that they're interested in doing, just helping them out and making it a little easier, or just taking the time to explain, hey, here's how you can do it. It's not a big scary monster, you know?
Yeah, that's the important thing. And for somebody listening, or somebody, you know, hears this podcast, how do they get involved? How do, let's say, hey, I want to take this course for next year. How do you go about doing that? Is that something through the BHA? Do they contact you? What are the qualifications to be able to do this?
It wouldn't really be contacting me per se, but Backcountry Hunters and Anglers on their webpage, there's some information. Sawyer Connolly is the name of the gentleman, along with Trey Curtis. Those two guys head up the collegiate club program for BHA, and they're both out of the headquarters office there in Missoula. I think they would be the most logical place to start as far as asking about it. And, you know, if you live in a place where maybe you want to, you know, of a place where you could host something like that in, you know, New Mexico or Wisconsin or whatever the case might be. But those would be the two guys to start with, Trey Curtis and Sawyer Connolly, as far as finding out more information on it.
Yeah, no, that's great. And even for, you know, let's rule out not just the West. I mean, for somebody listening in Iowa or Michigan or wherever, you know, probably be able to expand that beyond to the Midwest, or just hunting in general, whether it's whitetails or turkeys, or it's basically the same.
And BHA has, I mean, they're growing like wildfire right now. They have chapters in, gosh, I can't even remember how many states, but they're all throughout the Midwest, growing in the South and the Northeast. There's definitely opportunities in states beyond the West, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's cool to see that grow, and sounds like a really, really neat course. And kind of along the same lines of that, you have currently kind of what you're doing, I believe, or maybe you just had it going on, is that Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow. And you touched on it a little bit earlier, but tell us a little bit about that and kind of, you know, these hunts that you do with that organization.
Yeah, and it's, I would say, on the same as far as, you know, Anna and I being excited about certain, I mean, I'll guide anybody, it doesn't matter, but these particular hunts, like the Hunting for Sustainability and this Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow hunt, those are really kind of in our wheelhouse as far as merging and kind of being perfectly in line with why we started Timber to Table. And so Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow is an organization, it's a nonprofit organization that, in my opinion, serves a fantastic role in terms of taking, they take graduate students and or folks that are already working in a wildlife management related field. So graduate students who are going to become future wildlife managers or current employees that are already wildlife managers who've never hunted before. So, which to me is a growing thing when you look at some of our federal agencies like Forest Service or the BLM or even the state agencies that are managing our fish, wildlife, and parks. More and more of their employees aren't people that hunt or fish. And so you've got folks making decisions on those species, but they're not necessarily having the understanding or the lens to look through like a hunter or an angler might. So Conservation Leaders for, and that's my 1-year-old in the background. I'm sorry about the,
oh, you're all good.
The noise.
You're all good.
But what Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow does is they host these 5-day clinics where they bring in these folks that sign up and they kind of give them, similar to Hunting for Sustainability, that course, they give them a much more in-depth 5-day long course on the history of hunting and firearm safety and the role hunting plays, and give these folks kind of an eye-opener. And most of the time they're extremely receptive to it. And their 5-day course usually ends with like a half day pheasant hunt, where they actually get to go out and maybe shoot a bird. And when I started to hear about this, I was like, well, man, I wonder if they do anything, you know, with like a deer hunt or an elk hunt, something big game related. And so when we kind of started to talk about it with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, who sponsors Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow, that's where everything kind of fell into place. And what we do, our role in it is we host 1 or 2 alumni of a Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow course, and they come on an elk hunt with us. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, so last year was the first year we did it. We had 2 graduate students, a gal from Mississippi State, who was studying, I think she was studying feral pigs, and then a gentleman from Utah who was looking at brucellosis in elk, and they went on a hunt with us. And then the gal that we're hosting this year is a grad student from Western State, and she's looking at studying chronic wasting disease in big game. So definitely folks that are going to be playing a role in future wildlife management decisions. So for us to be able to influence them in a hopefully positive way into the world of hunting is, again, it's why we're doing Timber to Table, to be point blank with it.
Well, that's huge. I mean, like you said, I mean, to have people in these positions that are making important management moves and, you know, influencing legislation and laws and policies, it's scary to think that we do have people out there right now that are in such important roles and they've never, you know, held a shotgun. They've never, you know, heard a bull elk bugle in their face, and they've never, you know, field dressed a deer, never went fishing. I mean, all that stuff, for people that it'd be like being the president of the United States from, you know, a different country. You just don't understand it. You don't know how it works. And for you to kind of develop that and you know, kind of mold and show the whole process, that's awesome. That's really cool. And it's very important work.
Oh yeah. That to me is that's not necessarily us doing the heavy lifting there. It's Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow. The role they're playing is awesome. I think they host like 14 or 15 of those 5-day clinics annually, around the United States. So it's not just a Western thing. It's Georgia to Michigan to Colorado to everywhere in between. And they're very good about it from the standpoint that the people they have running those courses are professionals, and they make a point to not be, they're not trying to do the recruitment of hunters.
Yeah.
They're just trying to introduce and educate people on the role hunting plays, to these, you know, wildlife managers, or employees that are in a wildlife related field. So they're pretty adamant about that, you know, like, hey, we're not trying to hook people on hunting through some gimmicks or whatever. It's again, the education, I keep coming back to that word, but that's really what they're about and what they're after, which is great.
Yeah, that's huge. I know when I talk to like people who just don't hunt, or, you know, some of my friends, and they're just kind of, they're blown away, or they don't always see that, you know, killing animals is conservation, you know. And I hate to use the word kill, but I mean, that's what it is. It's money, you know. You have to take a few to sustain the population, and through that comes funding for the department officials, the wildlife officers, the biologists, habitat improvements, you know, all those license fees and the products that we buy go back into the conservation of the animal. And a lot of people just don't see it from that side. They see hunting as just, you know, sometimes a blood sport. I think sometimes it's portrayed in the wrong image through Hollywood, through, you know, social media sometimes, unfortunately. So that it's good to see, again, people like yourselves kind of promoting hunting in this manner. It's a breath of fresh air. And again, we need more of it.
I would agree.
Well, cool. So we've covered that stuff. That's pretty much kind of what I was looking to go for this year. Talk to us a little bit about Timber to Table guide service. How did your 2018 go? I know you guide in Unit 61, 62, this kind of southwest part of Colorado. How's your operation? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I kind of started to go there at the beginning of the conversation, but we basically have, you know, Timber to Table is, I guess, the flagship, so to speak, and that's really the main thing that Anna and I are focused on. But last year, we, in order to offer from a business standpoint, in order to expand and be able to offer early season hunts, we were able to pick up some permits on the Uncompahgre Plateau. Like you just mentioned, units 61 and 62 were on the south end of those two units. And by having those, we're now able to offer, you know, hunts in archery season, typically through about third rifle. We'll close up shop up there just from a weather standpoint. But we definitely do archery first and second rifle, and then about half of third rifle we'll spend up there, and then do the other half down here in the lower country. And that is more of a traditional outfitting approach. I still get, and will kind of, depending on what the person wants for their hunt, we still get a lot of first-time elk hunters that want to learn, you know, how to bow hunt elk, or they want to learn how to rifle hunt elk, or whatever the case might be. If they're looking for a specific type of hunt, I'll sometimes book them through our early season operation, which is called Dark Timber Outfitters. And that's the one on the plateau. And so we had a pretty good year up there. Archery season, it was a shoulda, woulda, coulda archery season. We had, I think, I want to say 100% opportunity, but no kills. So we went 0 for 8. During archery, which is a little frustrating from a guide standpoint. But when everybody has opportunities and they either miss shots, or they pass on shots, or the bull needs to take one more step because the brush is blocking their vitals at 15 yards, there's
You did everything you could do.
Yeah, there's some stuff that I just can't control. But it was still a great, archery season. First rifle, we had 100% success. Everybody killed a bull in that hunt. I think we killed four that season. Second rifle was pretty tough. Had a couple opportunities, but nobody was able to connect. And then, third rifle, we killed a nice bull, but all four of the guys had opportunities as well. And we killed a nice buck that season too.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was good. It was a good fall, and yeah, had a couple weeks off, so I could actually hang out with my wife and two girls for a few.
Have
weeks
a life for a little bit.
yeah. Now, like I say, just this week we started up our timber to table hunts, the late season cow hunts. So
very cool.
Yeah, so it's been a good 2018 for sure.
Yeah, well, it sounds like your archer season was a lot like mine and others that I've talked to and hunted with. It was a tough season. Had some close calls, but no tags filled. Did you see a big difference this year with like the fires and the drought, like as far as elk concentration? Like from what I experienced, the elk weren't in the meadows in the high country, just because it seemed like all the grass was burnt up. There was no snow melt. The water was kind of, you know, sparse. And because of that, I didn't see a lot of movement and a lot of elk activity in the areas that I normally do. Did you see that kind of same thing? Like were elk in different areas because of lack of food and water, or did it seem like it really didn't affect what you've done in the past?
Yeah, I would say the latter more so than the former. I pretty much hunted the areas that I know hold elk and usually do hold elk. And by and large, they were still there. The plateau was definitely dry. I mean,
yeah,
the pond, there's a lot. It's a little deceiving because that plateau has a lot more water up there than what you might normally think. There's a lot of sloughs and seeps and kind of moosey habitat in places, and most of those places were bone dry. The ponds and all that stuff were dry, but there was still enough water up there in places that you know, the elk were able to get to them. And when you got into what I noticed was in the aspen stands, there was still pretty good feed in there. Now, when you got down into like the oak brush and some of that stuff, that's a little more exposed and a little warmer. It was depressing. The earth was cracked and everything was brown.
Yeah.
But up in the dark timber and some of those aspen stands, there was enough feed to kind of hold elk up high and kind of allow them to be in their normal areas. And then, you know, with some of that moisture we got in September, that allowed for a little bit of growth in the grass as well. So it wasn't too far off the mark as far as, you know, where elk quote unquote should be.
Got it.
As far as hunting goes, which was good.
Yeah, very cool. Well, it sounds like you had a good year. Where can people go to check out Timber to Table Guide Service and your outfitting operation? What's your website? Do you got social media? Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Timber to Table webpage is timbertotableguideservice.com. Dark Timber Outfitters is darktimberlodge.com. We have an off-grid lodge up there surrounded by public land in Unit 61, and that's where we base our hunts out of. So Dark Timber Lodge, LODGE, is where you can find information on our early season hunts. And then I'm a bit of a Luddite in terms of technology. I have an Instagram page that's hashtag timber to table. No two, it's, as far as the number goes, it's TOTIMBERTOTABLE. For Instagram. And I have a Facebook page, but I kind of just, I don't do it much. I guess I just kind of would rather.
It's tough.
I kind of stay away from some of that stuff, but I try to put posts on Instagram occasionally. I guess I like Instagram more than Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's where folks can find out about us if they have questions. And to be honest, I'd just as soon people give me a call on the phone and can chat on the phone and go about it that way. But my email is timbertotable@hotmail.com. That's another reliable way to get in touch with us. So, yeah, a few methods out there for sure.
Perfect, perfect. Well, hey, Adam, I've taken up enough of your time, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do this podcast. It's been very eye-opening for me. I mean, on the educational side and what you're doing, and love what you have going on. So hopefully we can link back up here and talk some elk or some deer or some hunting in a different light after this. But this is a very good first conversation, and definitely enjoyed it. So again, thank you.
Yeah. And thank you as well. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our business, obviously, but I think on a bigger plane, the opportunity to talk about some of the other folks out there that are doing cool things that we just kind of work alongside, and they make us look good. So Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and Conservation Leaders for Tomorrow, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, those are people that we feel really lucky and blessed to be partnered with on some of these hunts. So thanks for the opportunity to talk about that.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Well, cool, Adam. We'll again, appreciate you, and you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk at you soon.
Great. Thank you, Adam.
All right, there we go. Another episode in the books. Big thanks to Adam for coming on the show. That was just really cool to hear his story and to hear all the things that they're doing to promote hunting, to introduce new people to this lifestyle, this heritage, and show them the correct way, the way it should be perceived. And a lot of times, you know, people that are new to hunting or have never done it before, they see social media and some of the bad stuff you see on there, and they see movies and how hunters are portrayed. And with Adam and his wife and, you know, the operation that they're running and these programs that they put together in partnership with BHA and RMEF and Colorado Parks and Wildlife and these other organizations, it's just a breath of fresh air. And as I alluded to many times in the conversation, we need more people like Adam and more promotion of hunting, not in a way that's like shoving it down your throat, and, you know, we're not trying to recruit people. It's just, it's showing it the correct way and the honest way, that 99% of hunters, are like. And it's important work too. I mean, to have people, it was a scary thought to hear Adam say that there's a lot of people making management decisions and a lot of people working in wildlife management or at the department or federal state agencies that are making these decisions that have a huge impact on us as hunters and outdoorsmen that have never actually hunted before in their lives. That's scary. So to hear that they're doing work such as this and putting on these programs and workshops and introducing these graduate students and people that are going into those fields to a real life hunting scenario and experience, it's very cool stuff, and it's important. It's very important. So again, hats off to Adam, and thanks again for coming on the show. If you're looking to book a hunt to unit 61, 62, that's right in my backyard. I know this very good elk hunting area. So you'd be in good hands with Adam for sure. It definitely sounds like a cool operation that he runs there. Archery, rifle, elk and mule deer. Definitely check him out. So, definitely give Adam a look, and I'm sure you can't go wrong. All right, so that wraps it up. Again, if you subscribe to transitionwild.com, you're starting to plan your elk hunt for next year to Colorado, go over to transitionwild.com, subscribe, and I will send you the Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide for free. It's going to walk you through scouting and planning your hunt, determining when to go, what gear to buy, all that stuff. And then further inspiration and tactics and tips in there as well. It's a 9-10 page guide. So go download that by subscribing to transitionwild.com. All right, that is it. Check out Sportsman's Nation on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Go to the website. You can subscribe there so you're not missing an episode. Be much, much appreciated. Check me out, Transition Wild, on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. Hope you guys are having a great holiday season so far. Christmas is right around the corner. Tell your family you love them. And be nice to your mother. That is it. I'm gonna leave you with that. Oh, this episode's brought to you by Heads Up Decoy. Check them out, headsupdecoy.com. Be nice to your mom, and we'll talk to you soon.